going to be talking a little bit about digestion today. So this is something that is pretty important, and I think really goes under-recognized when considering our optimization and not only our weight loss efforts, but just our physical output in general. So maybe you've experienced throughout your life these fits of just not being able to digest food properly. Maybe you're having some gastrointestinal distress. Maybe there's some bloating going on perpetually throughout the day for you as a result of eating, a certain food or another. So we're going to talk a little bit about today some basics of the digestion system and how we can tackle our acid reflux problems and some of the other digestive issues that lie in the realm of, poor timing for our nutrition or simply eating foods that aren't conducive towards, these goals of ours of eliminating some of the distress within our digestive system. So with that being said, I kind of want to touch into some of the complications. So we know that gastrointestinal distress can be a pretty complex issue, but if we're implementing the right level and combination of physical activity, there should be benefit to be seen for most people, so the majority. So what we know is that there's most of the time the most common is irritable bowel syndrome, so IBS. This is a chronic gastrointestinal disorder that really has no detectable organic trigger, and the symptoms that include abdominal pain, they include bloating, they include constipation or diarrhea. We also have GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, which is acid reflux, for those of you that don't know. So this occurs when the upper portion of the digestive tract does not function properly. So this causes the stomach contents to flow back into the muscular tube of the esophagus, linking the mouth to the stomach. So usually that indication of having kind of that sore throat, heartburn, this is where these problems are originating. So in a normal digestion, in normal digestion rather, a ring of muscles at the bottom of the esophagus, which is the sphincter, opens to allow food to pass through into the stomach and then quickly closes to prevent the backflow into the esophagus. So this sphincter can malfunction and it can allow foods or contents of whatever's been ingested from the stomach, including some of these acids that lie within the stomach, hydrochloric acid, to push up into the esophagus, which again can cause that burning sensation. This is a problem for some of our athletic populations and just in general for people that are experiencing this kind of distress within their digestive system, which leads to some of these implications. So we also have ulcers, which are usually a result from a sort of infection with bacteria. So these are sores that are breaks in the lining of any part of the digestive tract that contains the gastric juice. So there's been research that's linked the physically demanding jobs as well as you've heard this old adage, stress leading to a stomach ulcer. We're actually finding that there's very little to no correlation. And it actually says that, based off of these studies, that in fact, evidence is showing that moderate leisure time, so kind of taking time away from physical activity, can have a protective effect on the gastrointestinal lining. So we've also got IBD or inflammatory bowel disease. This ultimately includes Crohn's, this includes ulcerative colitis. The results have been, for the most part, that individuals are, having issues with their bowels. And this inflammatory bowel disease is uncomfortable, and it's something that, can really be a detriment to our physical activity. And we're kind of getting into some of the more serious implications of, either poor nutrition, poor timing of nutrition. So these are really, for the most part, outside of, our irritable bowel syndrome and looking into some of the constipation and gastroesophageal reflux disease, that acid reflux. Those are more of your common modes of gastro and digestive distress. So, we need to understand that these things can be prevented. These things can be, improved upon with just realizing kind of what our stomach does. And that's what I'm going to explain here very briefly with you. And then we'll talk about some techniques or foods or timing methods that are going to help you digest and process your food more efficiently. So let's kind of go over a brief overview of the digestive system. So digestion really starts at the mouth. You think about, mastication in the form of chewing. Digestion really starts the moment that food enters your mouth. Sorry, I've got hiccups. I just drank a very large protein shake. Speaking of gastral distress, right? Anyway, the mouth is where this digestive process starts. So we need to understand that upon mastication, you have saliva that's breaking down food at a chemical level, and it really helps to moisten the food and allows for easier swallowing, so that when the food is going through that transit, the time between the transit is reduced. That's why it's important to chew your food properly. You can really break down the food as it transits through the esophagus. So once it leaves the mouth, it travels to the stomach via the esophagus. And gravity does help to move the food down. However, we have these involuntary kind of wave-like contractions along the digestive tract called peristalsis. So these peristaltic contractions continually push that food forward along the digestive tract, and it continues to push down toward the stomach. So the stomach can be looked at as like this holding reservoir that churns food and secretes all of these digestive enzymes and acids to break down food. Now, food generally stays in the stomach for approximately 2 to 4 hours, although there's quite a bit of factors that can affect this time frame. So, for example, liquids that leave the mouth faster than solids, we know that carbohydrates exit more rapidly than proteins, and proteins exit more rapidly than lipids. So this is just going back to the fact that high fiber carbohydrates that stay in the digestive tract longer than simple carbohydrates. So this can be useful in circumstances where an athletic event in which carbohydrates is needed fairly quickly. It's probably going to be best to consume more of like a liquid carbohydrate in the form of like a Gatorade or a sport drink. Conversely, for those individuals who are, kind of restricting their caloric intake, it's probably a good idea to choose high fiber or more protein-rich meals that make an individual feel fuller for a longer period of time. So, thinking about digestion, and if we're thinking about physical activity, we need to know that there's going to be certain time-bound factors we want to fall within, so that we're not going in, or we're simply limiting the amount of distress that can be acting on our digestive system and on our body that may cause implications towards our exercise. So, within the stomach, you have acid that helps kill the normal levels of bacteria that may be ingested with the food or maybe on the food. It can't kill all of the large quantities of bacteria to prevent foodborne illnesses, however, so that's why some people get sick by spoiled or you know, improperly or not thoroughly cooked food. But the stomach really does an amazing job to expand as the food enters. So, you know, understanding that in a human stomach, in an adult stomach, roughly we're talking about the size of a fist. A full stomach can expand up to 4 times that fist. So it's not surprising when the size of an empty stomach is viewed in relation to the typical meal served in a restaurant in America. So it's really no wonder why people leave the restaurant barely able to walk due to their fullness. So yeah, that, I mean, that is an issue with the type of you know, portions that we're consuming in our meals. I think that if you were to really break down and see how many macronutrients you're getting between your protein, fat, and carbohydrate source that make up the food you're eating, a lot of you would probably take a second thought about what you're putting in your body. So, that being said, after the food is churned and mixed with stomach acid and all these enzymes, it becomes a liquid substance known as chyme. And chyme remains in the stomach until it's ready to enter the next chamber of the digestive tract, which there are two valves in the stomach that work to prevent chyme from exiting prematurely. And these two openings are called the sphincters that expand to allow food to pass through. The one opening is called the esophageal sphincter, while you know, this process that leads into kind of what we're talking about earlier with this complication of the GERD, right? Or gastroesophageal reflux disease. So, you know, many people complain of heartburn and heartburn symptoms. That second valve is the pyloric sphincter, which ultimately works to prevent the stomach chyme from entering the small intestine either prematurely or all at once. So, you have these two sphincters, one that allows food to pass through, which is the esophageal sphincter, and it allows food from kind of backflowing up the throat. However, during an aspect of GERD or you know, this acid reflux heartburn symptoms, there's a dysfunction here. That food is kind of overflowing and backing toward that esophageal sphincter. And that can cause some problems with our digestive process and ultimately lead to some uncomfortable and unruly implications towards our physical efforts. So then, you know, we're looking at the small intestine, and that's our primary site of digestion. And the absorption of the nutrients in the body via the digestive tract, there's also, you know, an abundance of more enzymes to break down that food into larger molecules, or excuse me, into smaller molecules, so that they can cross that intestinal cell wall into the bloodstream, so that we can, you know, digest these macronutrients and absorb these nutrients. So, really, you know, what we're looking at here is a system of different processes, right? The food is being broken down into its smallest particles, starting at the mouth, starting with mastication. So we need to realize, you know, what we're putting in our body is going to play and ultimately influence the digestive process. Like I discussed earlier in this discussion, was this fact that intaking more high fiber carbohydrates that are not going to stay in the digestive tract longer is going to be an important factor. So, a lot of us are eating high fat, high protein meals, but we're not getting quite as much fiber as we need within our diet to kind of continue to burn and churn and break down the necessary fuel. And that can be an issue when discussing our physical output. So, We go from the small intestine to the large intestine, and there's, in a healthy person, there's about 5% of whatever you've eaten that reaches the colon from the large intestine. So, an amount that includes some vitamins and minerals, there's contents that can remain in the large intestine for 24 to 72 hours, depending on your fiber and fluid content in the meal that's ingested. So, that large intestine contains water, it contains sodium, potassium, also small amounts of undigested starches, microflora that help keep that bacteria and keep the colon healthy. So, colon bacteria are essentially responsible for producing the gas as a byproduct of their digestion of fiber and other waste products in that digestive process. So diets that are adequate in fluid and fiber usually result in stools that are soft and easily pass through the rectum. So now thinking about the inverse, where diets that are inadequate in fluid and fiber may be hard and dry stools. That's uncomfortable to begin with. So this all comes back to food and hydration, folks. And I know a lot of us think that we're working really hard and think that we deserve to eat the foods that we like, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that we need to be more careful about our timing in our nutrition. I think that we need to be more cautious about the types of factors that ultimately affect digestion, and that being nervousness or stress within a competitive event, right? This can cause some distress within our digestion. So there's not really an unequivocal rule that exists as to whether stress speeds up or slows down digestion, but if an individual is nervous, that food may stay in the stomach longer than normal and produce a kind of uncomfortable feeling. And I've been in that position myself, being a wrestler back in high school. I've had to deal with that before. The timing in which you eat before your meet and after your weigh-ins, there's really not, if you're not drinking Pedialyte or you're not drinking one of those kind of simple carbohydrate sources like we just discussed in the form of a protein, or excuse me, a Gatorade or some sort of sports drink, then you're gonna have less than optimal performance. I remember downing peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and that was just the worst thing possible before stepping on the mat to go toe to toe with another individual. So just not a good idea. But all in all, folks, the digestive process is one in which food is ingested starting at the mouth, and it's broken into smaller components that are either stored or excreted from the body. And it occurs, throughout the length of the digestive tract that begins and ends from the mouth to the anus. And these nutrients are absorbed throughout. So, it's breaking down in smaller and smaller components, and each time it's breaking down, more nutrients are being absorbed. So this just allows you to understand that most of the digestion of fats, proteins, and carbohydrates really occur in the segment of the digestive tract of the small intestine. So the large intestine, or the lower part of the digestive tract, is where most of the water and electrolytes are reabsorbed into the body. And the speed of the digestion process is influenced mostly by external factors. So like we just talked about, athletic competition, timing, stress, these are all things that can play an inherent role and influence our physical activity and physical output. So, that kind of leads me into some of the factors that we need to be considerate of when we're discussing, gastroesophageal reflux disease or any of the others. So, we have an athlete. He's a basketball player, and he's recently been diagnosed with GERD, or acid reflux, and he experiences symptoms of acid reflux every time he practices or has a game, and the symptoms worsen with strenuous exercise. And he's wondering what diet changes can he make to control and better his symptoms so that he can perform better and feel better about his performance. So, again, going back to this aspect of understanding what acid reflux is, it's understanding the symptoms. So it's kind of this acidic taste in the mouth. You're getting this chest pain, difficult swallowing, some throat irritation. You may have some heartburn. Most of the time, it's like a regurgitation or like chronic bloat. But these things can be a detriment to our performance and can be limiting factors towards our exercise output. So, in the wake of this whole SummerSlam challenge and discussing our meal plans, I wanted to go over this aspect of, the foods that we eat, because really what it comes down to is that most of us are indulging in foods that are not working with our digestive processes and not fueling our body properly, but the absolute inverse of that. So to help alleviate the symptoms and to temporary or excuse me, to help alleviate symptoms, to kind of limit these frequency and distress in the digestive system, is we're going to want to look into being on a more consistent eating pattern. So infrequent eating or kind of like binge eating habits are going to really mess you up in this aspect that we're talking about with gastrointestinal distress. So, finding better times, more frequent times to eat, smaller portions, it's going to help your metabolism break down these foods and digest them properly. So, ultimately, with that, we want to continue to hydrate ourselves. So, like I talked about, hydration is a key component to the saliva. It's a key component to that initial mastication process. And again, we talked about that starting in the mouth. We need to make sure we're hydrated so that our saliva can work to produce the enzymes and break down that food beginning at the mouth so that it's easily digestible and can help travel in its transit down the esophageal tube more efficiently. So, we also ultimately, in my last point here, is we want to avoid these gastric irritants as they will make these things worse, these symptoms worse. And that starts with tomato products, anything tomato products, tomato paste, spaghetti, all of those things are going to cause problems. And how you can counteract that is adding a little bit of sugar, is what I like to do. But spicy foods are another one. Peppermint, spearmint, those are two type of inflammatories. Onions are another one, cause gastrointestinal distress. Garlic, fried and other high fatty foods. Citrus, and this one should come as no surprise, these next three. Carbonated beverages, caffeine containing beverages, and alcohol. So those top three are probably the most overabused aspects of symptoms that could be, or excuse me, practices that could be exacerbating symptoms here. So, when we're thinking about our eating patterns moving forward, it's important that we recognize we want to ingest more high fiber meals, especially in the morning. This is going to help keep you satiated longer in conjunction with a high protein intake. But also limiting the amount of fats that we eat. And that's not to say that, you can't have your peanut butters and things like that. But again, it's moderation, folks. There's no reason why most of your calories should be coming from a fat source. And that's probably why most of us in the US are having issues with our digestive system and obesity rates and just the breakdown and metabolizing of food is because we're not eating the right food. We can't metabolize something that doesn't have nutritional value. So, I mean, we can metabolize it clearly, but with implications. So my closing point here is to make all of you aware that you could very well be contributing to the exacerbation of your symptoms when it comes to acid reflux. So if that's you, clean your diet up. Most of you are eating ice cream at night. Most of you are having chocolate throughout the day. Like, guys, there's a reason why you have these problems, and it's not something that you can get fixed with surgery. It's not something that medicines are going to solve for you. It starts and ends with you. And you get out what you put in, and if you aren't willing to change the things that you can control, then you really don't want to be better. So I wanted to lay out all of these foundational pieces for you today. I wanted you to understand the digestive process and the nature of the digestive process. So I want to credit for one the resources that I was using today, sports and nutrition, weight management by the American Council on Exercise was an excellent resource to be able to discuss this topic. Found a lot of insightful information that really pertained towards my own life. So everything that I just read to you about the digestive process coming out of the second edition published by PhD Laura J. Crucial or Kruskal. Sorry about that. You know, this is the latest research coming out. This is the latest in sports nutrition and weight management, folks. So, you know, these are all practices that are up to date. These are all practices that are going to be foolproof and not, you know, not lead you astray into some sort of gimmick. It really just comes down to eating better, folks. And I know you guys know that. But it's my job to reinforce healthy habits and start to make that shift. It is 2019, and if you are not making efforts towards living a healthier and happier life, you're gonna get left behind moving forward, folks. We are shifting towards a time that is becoming more hyper aware of not only aesthetics but health. Medicine is at an all-time high in which people are living in the longest life expectancy possible. So these are things that are going to help sustain longevity of life. And it's absolutely crucial for not only your day-to-day life, and not only just your physical exercise, but your overall health and mortality. You know, it's a difficult task to be able to always be mindful of what you're eating at first. Things get easier, and if you aren't willing to be challenged, then you don't deserve change. So that's it for the show today, guys. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Hopefully, this gives you some insight on ways that you can approach your nutrition and having some flexibility and being able to eat some of the foods that you like, but without causing a lot of that distress and uncomfortability that could potentially impede on your physical performance and output. So, thanks you guys for tuning in. If you get a chance, like, comment, subscribe on the channel, and follow the journey throughout the SummerSlam Challenge. A lot of exciting stuff happening there. So, looking forward to seeing your feedback and hope to be talking to you again soon.